Did you know you can sponsor Nerd and Tie? Just go to GoFundMe.com/Nerd and Tie. Anything you can throw to us will help keep us going long and strong, and everyone will be happy in the magical land of flowers. That's a thing. I'm not doing another take. On this episode of Nerd and Tie, we get a first look at the new Power Rangers movie. Wonder Woman is canonically queer. Iron Fist gets a release date. The Tick has been picked up for a full season order by Amazon. Ben Affleck's Batman movie may or may not have a title, depending on how the wind's blowing. Wine Country Comic Con held their second event, and we held our first. All that and your mail on this episode of Nerd and Tie. Woohoo.
Oh, yeah.
Oh boy. So,
living in a post-Nexpo era.
I know. So for those of you who don't know, it took us like three takes to get started. The first time, because I screwed up the sponsorship take, just a normal way, had to do it again. And the second time, I accidentally launched into the convention bumper. which we'll talk about next like later in the show in our convention section, but we totally ran a convention 2 weeks ago.
It was awesome.
That was, yeah. So anyways, for those of you who don't know, I am one of your hosts, Trey Dorn. Joining me as always is the splendiferous Nick Izumi.
I am here and I am alive.
First Nurse is unfortunately unavailable this episode, so he is with us in spirit, in our hearts, in our minds, in our souls. And this is Nerd and Tie, the only podcast with a dress code. We swear.
Indeedy.
And if we turn out not to be the only podcast with a dress code, please tell us about those other podcasts so we can go beat them up and take their lunch.
Yeah, no one steals my thunder, cats.
Ho.
I'm so sorry. It's been a weird week.
It has been a weird. it's been a weird couple of weeks, and we're going to talk about at least the entertaining part of that weirdness on this episode, because that's what we do here on Nerd and Tie. We are both really out of it, and we're doing this with man down. So this is going to be an interesting episode for you people at home, and hopefully you stick with us, power through, and make sure you know where your sandwiches are. Our first story is that we have now seen the first teaser trailer for the upcoming Power Rangers film.
Go Power Rangers.
Yeah. So that was totally a thing. So the funny thing about this trailer is that it was not seemingly meant to be released. It was accidentally posted to the official Facebook page and then promptly pulled. But because people had been spreading it around, they reposted it to Twitter and to YouTube and all that. And so it is pretty much what you'd expect from a Power Rangers reboot trailer, in my opinion.
It's getting a lot of hate, which is strange, because honestly, some people might read it as a little grimdark, but it's pretty clear they're cutting it in a way to make it look a lot more dramatic.
That's the thing, is that, like, yes, it does look very dark. I like the complaints of, like, oh, it looks like the Breakfast Club meets the whatever, and I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, clearly it looks like the Breakfast Club because they're going to Saturday morning detention, but, like, that's not weird for Power Rangers. Considering it is a bunch of high school kids.
I would say, did they watch the source material? Because
well, apparently they want them to get together because they happen to be friends at a Kung Fu Dojo juice bar. That's
right.
But anyways, for the most part, yeah, it's a lot of people are complaining because it's grimdark, because there's a lot of scenes at night, although not all the scenes are at night. I will say, like, I was a little annoyed with the muted color palette because that seems to be an overused thing in a lot of movies. But actually, if you break down the scenes, there's a lot of, like, small humor in there that is kind of, like, I mean, even like when Billy gets hit in the face, because I think it's the actress playing Trini, like, makes a comment about the cops showing up and kind of an I told you so moment. Like, you can tell that the the actual film has has what is obviously meant to be humorous, like, stuff stuck in. It's just that the person who edited the trailer, and we should be clear, the people who edit trailers are not the filmmakers. The people who make the trailers are not the filmmakers.
It's pretty common that a trailer will reveal things that the director is not happy that the trailer reveals.
I think the only film that had, like, the only film I can think of that had, like, director involvement with the trailer cutting are, like, Star Wars Episode 7.
Oh, wow.
Because everything was so, like, controlled about what they could release and what JJ was willing to let out there into the world.
Good old J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams. Yes. That's why, like, with Star Trek Beyond, like, Justin Lin got annoyed that they put the bike jump in the trailer, being, like, he had no idea they were going to do that. And, you know, it's like in Star Trek Beyond, the motorcycle scene is in there, but it's a small part of the film. And
yeah, it's kind of minor. It's not...
Yeah.
It's not a focal point.
Right. So it's like, people watching this trailer need to keep that in mind, is that don't pay attention to the, you know, creepy cover of I Walk the Line. You know, don't just look at the moments in there. And so, like, yeah, I mean, like, I can, like, some people complained about, like, having powers outside of the suits, and that's fine. But really, where are you going to find 5 kung fu expert teenagers? In a realistic setting.
Also, I mean, I'm just saying, they fought pretty well against the Putty Patrol. No costumes, most episodes. So, yeah.
Well,
it seems a little strange that.
That's because they were all martial arts experts, because they all hung out at the Kung Fu Dojo Juice Bar.
Right. Sorry. I didn't think about that.
You know, where. Yeah.
Like you do.
I mean, am I disappointed that the trailer didn't have Bulk and Skull in it with bump, bada bada bump, bada 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 bump, bada
bada bada bump, bada 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 bump.
I mean, it's sad that I know the Bulk and Skull music cue off the top of my head, but
I'm a little surprised you know that one. That's my generation, but not quite as much yours.
First season.
No, that's true.
First season. I mean, I was at the end of the age range. I was junior high school. Like, everyone my age remembers through the Green Ranger saga, and then we all stopped.
Mm.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah. It's like, and yeah, it, we all remember through the Green Ranger saga. And then you start switching out the original team, it kind of, like, fades, you know?
Yeah. I impressed myself that I still remember the name of some of the names of some of the characters from the later parts of the show.
Well, I remember some of the replacement
Mighty Morphin years.
I remember some of the replacement Rangers in the Mighty Morphin years, like, you know, Rocky.
I'd say you gotta remember Rocky, Aisha.
Aisha.
And Johnny Young Bosch.
And Johnny Young
Adam,
Bosch.
That was his character's
he's
name.
He's ironically.
I remember him more as Johnny Young Bosch than I do as the character.
He's ironically the only Power Ranger I've ever met, and I can't remember. He's the only character from that season whose name I can't remember.
Yeah,
like,
Adam.
I even remember Cat, the replacement Pink Ranger who came later.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. But I can't, like, it's. Oh, yeah, no, it's, what the hell was, if you know the name of Johnny Young Bosch's character, go to nerdandtie.com and click on the contact form. We won't see it until long after we're done recording this episode, but my God, this is the kind of day we're having.
I'll take it.
Oh, boy.
I'm decently excited, though. I'll probably see the movie.
I'll definitely see it. It's, you know, honestly, this is a prime target nostalgia film for anyone who's, like, under, like, I think the age range really is like 25 to 35 is kind of the key age range on this film.
Yeah, I can see that.
For, you know, for had to have enough nostalgia for the original cast. Where,
right.
You know, it's like, because these are, you know, Jason, Trini, you know, Billy, you know, Kimberly, like, these are the Zach, and, you know, these are the original characters. Although, remember, in this one, Billy's now the black one. he's still the Blue Ranger.
I'm fine with that, you know.
Oh, I've got no problem with that, but I have to admit that my maybe, like, I don't think it's that racist that my brain got confused at first. that Billy was black and Zach wasn't.
To be fair, the original show, they did not have much for personalities, so their physical appearance is part of how you tell them.
And to be fair, the original show, they made the Black Ranger the black one and the Asian Ranger the yellow one.
Yeah.
That's just... Wow. Wow, Saban. Yeah. Wow. Haim Saban's a racist. I don't think I'm shocking anyone when I say that.
Well, you get kind of the further complication there, though, like with the whole, I don't know where I was going with that. Never mind.
I don't know, but I was interested to find out. But so anyways.
It was something in regards to, I really didn't know where I was going with it. It was just, it's always interesting to me when you get something so, that either is so, I don't know if it was intentionally racist, but something that can be so easily read as racist from someone who is arguably part of a minority group. I mean, Haim Saban is Jewish, if I'm not mistaken. He's actually an Israeli immigrant, so
doesn't mean he can't be racist.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Anyways, as we you know, but anyways, let's about Power Rangers. It's the trailer doesn't look exactly what we want. There's not enough Elizabeth Banks in that trailer, I will tell you. That is the thing.
Yeah, that's true.
And the trailer really doesn't show us anything. It's not going to be in, like, the first quarter of the movie.
That, too.
And I'm fine with that overall, but I'm like, we know there are going to be Zords. We know that they're, you know, like, that there's going to be combat in the suits, and we get, like, 5 seconds of a suit getting, like, put on.
I guess for me, the part of the appeal of Power Rangers in the first place was that, you know, the fact that it was my first taste of tokusatsu without knowing what tokusatsu was. And there's really isn't much of a tokusatsu flavor to this trailer.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that there won't be in the movie.
No, it doesn't. That's true.
Yeah. It's,
yeah, there might be. So I'm withholding judgment till it happens.
Yeah. So it's my general thoughts are that this trailer told us nothing. And other than someone tried to edit this trailer, like, I mean, the smart thing to do, really, if you're making a movie like this, and this is what, is that you want to tug on the nostalgia strings, right, man? The person who edited this trailer didn't do it. I think this is more of a situation, though, where it's like the first Star Trek Beyond trailer, I think is the perfect example, where they edited together something that was technically composed of clips from that movie, but not a representation of what the actual film was like. And the second trailer actually was much more on hand. I wonder if the reason why they pulled it initially was because they felt it wasn't a good representation of the film.
That's entirely possible.
And that's my hopeful estimation. let us speak of other things, Nick.
Well, you know, actually, since it is National Coming Out Day.
On the day we're recording this, yes.
On the day that we're recording this, it's kind of appropriate to talk about recently Greg Rucka, a previous writer for Wonder Woman and the current writer for Wonder Woman in the DC Rebirth line, which, by the way, another one of the best comic books that I've been reading recently, has officially made the statement, like, DC endorsed the statement has officially been made that Wonder Woman is canonically queer.
Yay!
For anyone who's been reading Wonder Woman for any amount of time before the New 52, this is not news, but...
No, not remotely, but... Well, it's news to let to that editorial is allowing it to be, like, explicitly canon.
Mm-hmm. And I also think it's what is great about it getting all this attention is that for any LGBTQ comic readers who did not know that Wonder Woman was queer, this is, you know, a really great opportunity to see a little bit more representation, especially with such a mainstream character.
Yeah, it's...
So, anyone from the LGBT community, if you did not know that Wonder Woman was queer, welcome. I hope you enjoy reading her because she's amazing.
Yeah, and so we should talk about this. And this is the reason why we're talking about this. Like, it's not like that this is old hat. Like, this is old hat to us as fans of Wonder Woman, because if you go back to most of the writers of Wonder Woman, it's like Gail Simone has explicitly said that when she was writing Wonder Woman, she was writing her as bisexual. And we don't know if Diana would identify as bisexual or pansexual. She would probably just say she loves everybody.
I loved how Rucka put it in a separate interview when he was asked about it. He's like, well, I think the Amazons, that's just how it is. I don't even think they'd have a word for gay. Because just everyone is that way on Themyscira. That just is it, you know?
I think that it gets forgotten a lot with the constant DC reboots, that writers have been writing her this way for a long time. But it is true that no one has explicitly said it in canon. It's always been implied. It's always been kind of that thing. And, I mean, it's true that her classical love interest is Steve Trevor, who, you know... is a dude,
but that doesn't make her identity any less real.
Right. I'm saying that's why people might not be aware, because this is the problem with, you know, where people often just pay attention to with bisexual and pansexual characters. People pay attention to who the person is with now, not who they have been with or who they're attracted to. It's the same reason why, it's anytime a character like dates someone of a different gender than what they were dating before in any series. Like, if a female character starts dating women after having dated men, she's automatically said became a lesbian, instead of just acknowledging that the character could be attracted to more than one gender. This has happened with the lead from The 100, Clark, that character.
Mm-hmm.
Willow's a little more complicated question from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but the fact is that she was romantically interested in Oz, and now whether or not that was a situation of denial, we don't know because the series ended, and so it's not been expanded upon,
It's been interesting seeing how people have, for me, what's been the most infuriating thing for me has been watching people not understand that.
Well, and I've seen this happen in so many fiction, like where people just can't grasp that there's more than just two orientations.
Mm-hmm. And that sexuality especially is very complicated.
Yeah.
My wife identifies as demi pansexual. That, you know, just because she's married to me, a cis dude, doesn't make her any less pan.
Yeah.
Like it. And
I'm sure that Fur would say if he were here, as Fur is pansexual, that just because he is dating a woman doesn't make him any less attracted to guys or people who identify as different genders. It's
exactly.
It's.
Yeah. It's.
But people, it nuance gets lost on some people. We'll just go with that. But that's why it's so important that it's being explicitly stated, because there are people who were reading the books under these other writers who, like, because they had a heteronormative vision of the character, were reading these scenes that writers meant to show, you know, certain things. They were reading them differently than they were intended. And so for those readers, it is important to explicitly say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I appreciate that. It was just, it was really interesting watching people's reactions.
Well, most of the people reacting angrily on the internet weren't really Wonder Woman readers.
Obviously.
Like, you get this every time that an iconic character has some sort of change. People who are completely unfamiliar with the fiction besides one thing that they saw or read one time, like, suddenly get very opinionated about what's right and correct about the character, even if that character has been repeatedly represented that way in the fiction and they just weren't paying attention. It's like, it's fine not to know, but it's not fine to declare yourself the authority when you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. It's
for a non-important example, for an example that doesn't actually involve any social issues whatsoever, it's like everybody who got mad that Optimus Prime was a long-nosed truck in Transformers 2007, completely ignoring Laser Optimus Prime. Which was a long-nosed truck with flames on the front of it that was out, you know, part of the G2 toy line. Long before.
I still own mine.
He's one of the greatest.
I got to bring him to Nerd and Tie Expo.
The greatest.
I should have.
Greatest Transformers toy ever made. Fur's not here. He can't stop us. So that's right.
Yeah,
I use Optimus
right.
Prime to make my point regarding, like, but everyone had strong opinions, even though, like, you know, it's. Even though there was clearly that was pre-established in the canon.
I like, I'm always amused by when fans get really upset. It's why recently, anytime I see people saying that they want the original Teen Titans back, I always post a picture of the Brave and the Bold issue from like the 60s where, Wally West, Dick Grayson, and Aqualad teamed up, and I'm like, I miss them too.
Yeah.
Because
they're
never talking about the actual original. There's, you know,
they're talking about the Cartoon Network show that they watched.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not Teen Titans Go. And they, like, if Teen Titans Go had any other name, these guys would not get mad. Like,
exactly.
Do I think it's silly?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, is Teen Titans Go an inferior show to the Teen Titans show that previously aired? Yes. It's also targeted at an age group that's 10 years younger.
Uh-huh.
It's like getting mad at a box of Duplos for not being like your Legos.
I love fandom.
This isn't as good as my Legos. These are big and dumb and brightly colored, and there's no spaceships. Duplos.
But
do they make Star Wars Duplos?
I don't think so.
I don't
know.
They
do Justice League ones, though.
That makes sense.
So back on that note, though, yeah. So, again, if you are in the if you are a member of the LGBTQ community and you did not know that Wonder Woman is a character who has been, at least I feel is a positive representation of your community and media, welcome. Please read her because she's awesome. Greg Rucka is a phenomenal writer. Check out his current Wonder Woman run. It's really good.
Yes.
One of the issues made me tear up, like real human tears and stuff. It's really good.
Really?
Yeah. No, he's addressing the whole New 52 origin thing by,
okay.
Wonder Woman kind of has an identity crisis and starts kind of not being able to, like, she remembers her New 52-ified origin, but she also remembers her George Perez origin. So she starts kind of flashing back and then realizes that she can't remember how to get back to Paradise Island. So concurrently, there is a really tragic storyline with the cheetah going on in the present. and a flashback heavy every other issue is a year one story, based very heavily on the Marsden and George Perez version of the origin. But apparently we are going to address where the weird stuff from the New 52 came in.
Okay.
Rucka has said his goal, because the way he sees New 52 Wonder Woman, he's like, well, the thing is, when you take away her lasso and she has a sword and she's just going around stabbing people and the Amazons don't love people, that's just Red Sonja.
Yes.
So we got to get
Wonder Woman. And Gail Simone did a very good run on Red Sonja. If you want a comparison to how Red Sonja should be written versus how Wonder Woman should be written, compare Gail Simone's run of Red Sonja to Gail Simone's run of Wonder Woman.
Perfect.
That would be a great crossover.
I very much agree with that statement. But yeah, generally, people whose first names start with G tend to be better Wonder Woman writers. I'm not quite sure why that is.
Oh, Greg Rucka's phenomenal. So, moving on to also on the small screen version of the comic book world, obviously we've all brains. Well, have you watched Luke Cage yet?
I haven't yet, no.
Oh my God, it's
I still
so good.
Jessica Jones.
Oh God.
I'm excited as hell for it because I loved him in Jessica. I just.
Oh God, Luke Cage is so good. Oh, it is so solid. It is gripping crime noir drama. It is. That just happens to have a superpowered lead.
The only thing that makes me sad about the Luke Cage show is that this probably means I won't get to see Luke Cage in the movies. And I was introduced to Luke in the Avengers, in the new Avengers book.
Yeah.
Like, that was the first book I read him in. So I really like him.
That's the book that made jokes about
characters.
People, like, saying, are you sure this is the Avengers? Isn't this the Defenders? Like, Luke Cage is here. Wolverine.
He was a great Avenger.
I loved
his interactions with everybody.
But Luke Cage can't be an Avenger until he's been a Defender.
That's true.
You can't jump ahead in the story, man.
I've always, basically since I first read it, since I first encountered him in a comic, I've loved Luke Cage. So
I will tell you the following things about Luke Cage without spoiling anything. Okay. He does, on several occasions, say Sweet Christmas.
Excellent.
And there is a scene in which they effectively, for about 30 seconds, have him in his original costume. The circumstances are where it's clearly accidental, like in-character accidental, but you will see Luke Cage with like the tiara and cuffs and open yellow shirt. And an afro for about like 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
You totally get that in a flashback. So,
nice. Power man.
Yeah. So,
awesome.
Yeah. You'll also get to hear him say, I'm not a hero for hire, which I laughed.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And multiple people refer to him as Power Man sarcastically.
Okay, that sounds cool. I'm very excited then.
Yeah, no, it's so good. It's so good. It's like, you should watch it. But anyways, that means, but because we've gotten Luke Cage, and
speaking
we already got Jessica Jones.
I said, speaking of heroes for hire.
Right, so we've gotten Luke Cage, and we've gotten Jessica Jones, and we've gotten Daredevil. That means there's only one hero left who we need before we get the Defenders, and that is, of course, Iron Fist. Now, Iron Fist obviously has been filming, and, you know, it's been in production, and we were all disappointed at the missed opportunity with the casting of Danny Rand. They just played it too safe. And
I can't believe people are still arguing that there's nothing are problematic about this, but anyway.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily problematic, only because it's just that I think it's a missed opportunity.
The execution
will dictate whether or not it's problematic.
Okay, that's a better way of putting it, yeah.
So it's, if this were a case where they were, like, whitewashing an Asian character. Like, the problem is there's a bunch of racist orientalist stuff in the original story, so it's all going to depend on the adaptation,
right.
And how they do it. But it's not like they recast a character who wasn't white as white. They just didn't do the, like, they just didn't take the opportunity that they had, which could have been just casting an Asian American Danny Rand. Because the only thing that's important about Danny Rand's nationality is just that he's from the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
He could have been any race. It's the only thing that's important is that he's from the U.S. And so, anyways, that aside, we'll all get to find out whether or not the show is problematic in March, mm-hmm. March 17th,
oh
to be exact, at 12:01 a.m. Pacific time. All 13 episodes of Iron Fist will hit Netflix in the face in North America. Are you excited? I'm excited. And so, I am excited only because these have all been really good shows so far. So even if they're like, even if there are problematic issues in Iron Fist, I have total faith that that this is going to be solid. I mean, you've got Jeff Loeb is the executive vice president of Marvel Television, and he's been doing a solid job with these Netflix shows. I mean, I can forgive him for writing the movie Teen Wolf and the movie Commando. You didn't know Jeff Loeb wrote Teen Wolf, did you?
I did not know that.
Yeah, no, totally.
No,
it is
insane.
His fault that Michael J. Fox in a werewolf costume, that his stunt double was doing flips on top of a truck. Yes, Jeff Loeb wrote Teen Wolf.
Wow.
Jeff Loeb also wrote the Arnold Schwarzenegger classic Commando.
Wow.
I totally found this out on accident looking up stuff about Teen Wolf randomly the other day. It was like, holy crap, Jeff, is that the same Jeff Loeb? It's the same Jeff Loeb.
But at least they,
That's amazing.
You know,
he
wrote a Long Halloween.
I'm just saying, like, he's responsible for the most unrealistic action scenes I've ever seen in a film with Commando. Have you seen Commando?
I haven't seen it.
Oh my god!
No, I've
it
never
is
watched
so.
Commando.
The garden shed scene alone is why Arnold Schwarzenegger deserves an Oscar. Only the opposite. it is a film. It is a film that should be watched in a group and possibly while at least some of the group are drunk.
Okay.
Noted. Yeah. But Iron Fist.
Yeah.
I don't know. I will say that, like, it's funny. Out of the Netflix side right now, Daredevil's actually my least favorite show out of the three we've gotten. I kind of agree. I like it. I'm not complaining about it. It's Jessica Jones was just amazing. And then I think Luke Cage held up to the level of Jessica Jones just in a different way, where Jessica Jones is very deeply emotionally traumatic. Luke Cage is just so much more interesting in its depth because you're really looking at the fabric of this fictional version of Harlem, and like even the dumb Method Man cameo is plot essential.
I'm looking forward to watching it. Like I said, I need to finish Jessica Jones because it's...
Oh god, that's intense.
Yeah, it takes a little bit, and
you can watch it on your own. You know that.
I could, but I like being a supportive, awesome person.
And that's when you watch it the second time.
But I was asked not to.
Oh well, then ask permission.
We can do. Go on.
Oh, I was just going to transition us out of here if you've got something else to say.
Okay, yeah. Nope, I have nothing else to say.
Well, then I was going to say, speaking of amazing superhero shows on online streaming networks.
So guess what? That Tick Pilot must have done pretty well because good old Amazon has done a full season order for The Tick.
Yay!
After putting out that pilot. Yeah, I'm jazzed.
Have you watched it?
I haven't gotten a chance to.
Oh,
no.
My God.
I actually don't have Amazon service.
Well, right, but they put that one online for free.
Oh, okay.
So
I'll take a
the
look
pilots,
at it
then. The pilots are often accessible for free for non-Prime members. So you should.
Okay.
I don't know if it still is, but you should go try to watch it, because that pilot is just, it is amazing. It is so different from.
I've been hearing nothing but good.
It is so different from the earlier two iterations of The Tick that we've gotten on screen, but it still feels very valid. Like, it has some more of the darkness that's in the comics that's not really present in the earlier on-screen adaptations. While still keeping the Tick's character lighthearted.
Yeah, that I've been pretty. I mean, I like every iteration I've actually experienced of the Tick.
Oh, yeah, no, it's what I'm saying is that it's good in a way that it is different. It's, you know, you have to think of the Patrick Warburton is the 30-minute episode version. This is the hour-long episode version.
Okay, cool.
So it is. It's not as cartoony, so it's more grounded while still feeling like the Tick. Like, I don't know, I've you know, watched the cartoon, watched the live action series, and read the original comics. So
okay,
like, it fits in well with it feels more akin to it's not as dark as the comics.
Okay.
Like, the comics get a little, like, get really kind of twisted dark sometimes. And
yeah, I hear they get a little too dark in places,
right,
from what I've been told.
But so it's, the Tick himself feels about as lighthearted as he does in, like, the cartoon.
Okay.
Which I felt that the cartoon was more serious than the live action series. Well, it is.
I can see that.
It is.
And now that about it.
So it's like if you, you know, the way to describe it is like if you took the Tick from the cartoon series and dropped him in a more realistic world.
Oh, dear God. I do need to watch this then.
Yeah. So he's still like smiling and laughing and acting like the Tick, or going around Arthur's apartment trying to find the lever to open the secret door that doesn't exist.
Right.
Just knocking things over and breaking stuff.
Oh, dear.
Aha! Yank. Break. Just. But while still, like, you know, but, like, in a world where, like, bad people are actually bad.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, it sounds like I need to see this.
Yeah,
then.
You should. I think it's going to be an amazing, like, the amazing thing about The Tick is that Ben Edlund's been behind pretty much every iteration as the creator of the character.
Like, okay, that's comforting then.
Yeah, I mean, so this is Ben Edlund's vision of the show. And so it's,
okay,
he's retained remarkable creative control over the property. Like, he,
I was going to say, that's astounding when I think about it for any amount of seconds.
Yeah, it's, so, and that's, I mean, like he didn't own all the, he didn't get to keep all the IP from, like, the cartoon. Like, the network got to own a lot of the characters he created for the cartoon, which is why, like, in the first live action series, the, you know,
we had Batman Well instead of Deflator Mouse.
Right, exactly. Because he couldn't, but any of the characters from the original comics, like Chairface Chippendale, he can reuse. It just, they couldn't do Chairface Chippendale in line. I don't know if you'd see a character like Chairface Chippendale this time around. The main villain is a villain who existed in the comics, but it's very different. Like, he's repurposing villains in different ways.
Okay.
And so it's, I think it's going to be fascinating. And we should probably.
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
And because, you know, it's, we're you know, almost 40 minutes in, we should probably move on to the next thing. So, The Tick, next year on Amazon. It'll be great.
Check it out.
Now for the least interesting story that I have seen so many blogs fill up like two pages of text on. So we all know Ben Affleck is co-writing, directing, and starring in a Batman standalone movie. We know this.
Oh my God.
And, you know, he, like, obviously is out been promoting for other films like The Accountant And so he's, of course, getting asked about this film that doesn't even have a release date yet, that they're still writing. Like, and apparently in an interview, he got asked what the movie was being called right now, and he just offhand said, well, right now we're calling it The Batman, but that could change. And in fact, since this came out, he specifically said, oh, it's a good chance it's going to change to something else. Because why not? Because it's not even a movie with a release date yet. It is, like, for all intents and purposes, untitled Batman film. You know, it's...
And it still basically is untitled Batman film.
Right. But so what happened was that all of these sites, like, would rehash two paragraphs from old stories, say that, oh, and it might be called The Batman, we think. Here's a link to the AP video. And then would write two more paragraphs about Justice League. And I saw, like, so many of these stories, and I'm just like, this is the biggest non-piece of news. And I just want to talk about how, like, as we update our blog when we have news to post about. Obviously, you know, we try to make sure we post at least every day, but sometimes we don't, because sometimes there's not something to write about. And we're not going to make up a story. This is literally the art of making up a story. I got so annoyed at this story, I didn't even announce that the new Wolverine movie's called Logan. I was so angry at the Batman story, which I did cover, that I totally skipped covering Logan. Because who cares?
That's not really that interesting.
The film based that we all think is going to be based off Old Man Logan is just called Logan? Who'd thunk?
Yeah, crazy. They must have lost a lot of sleep coming up with that title.
Well, actually, they probably did. I mean, honestly, when you've already called the movie Wolverine Origins, X-Men Origins Wolverine is the first movie in your spin-off franchise. That's an awful title. And then you went with The Wolverine. You can't call it The Wolverine 2 because it's the third movie. You can't call it Wolverine 3 because... No.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, this is heading into Rambo territory in terms of titles.
Right. So, go Logan. We'll call it Logan, and it's going to be the last time they know it's going to be the last one. So it's not like they've got to set it up for future sequel titles. So it's like, fuck it. It's Logan.
X-Men Endings Wolverine.
Well, no, because they could always recast Wolverine.
That's true. Gosh dang it. Anywho.
Maybe, like, cast someone who's the appropriate height.
Yeah, like, that's going to happen.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, I don't think there's really anything else to say.
There's not, so we're going to move on to conventions. And I'm going to grab the first bit of convention news, and that is, of course, to talk about my favorite subject in the whole wide world, and that is Wine Country Comic-Con.
Oh, man.
So... Wine Country Comic Con has been this kind of amazing thing. We first talked about it at the beginning of this year because they held their first convention back in April. And there was a lot of weirdness with the first convention where they had effectively created a myriad of fake Facebook accounts to spam Facebook groups. Like, they tried to catfish people, effectively. They'd create these elaborate Facebook accounts with stolen cosplayer images from Mexican cosplayers, including one person who actually has done, like, official art for Marvel. And then, like, this other account that you stole photos from a Ukrainian model. Like, it's all the stuff that was, like... And so we got tipped to that. And
super
skeezy. We wrote a whole bunch of articles about it, and it was super skeezy. And there were some questions about their charity and... their charitable connections had, like, some issues where they were kind of saying they were connected to a charity they weren't connected to. Eventually, they were officially connected to the Rose and Lions Club, but it was in no way related to, like, the stuff that they first said they were raising money for, which is a little kind of iffy, but technically they were attached to something in the end. And it was just all...
It's something.
They had, like, they had literally 17 of their guests cancel out of, like, 21. 17 out of 21
which
guests
is
cancel.
Astounding.
Well, really. Yeah, it is downright amazing, and, you know, it's Vic Mignogna was still there.
No, he made it. That's good.
Because Vic Mignogna, it was the guy who played Rocky on Power Rangers, whose name escapes me.
Steve Cardenas.
Yeah, Steve Cardenas. Thank you. And, like, Stanley's daughter. And then, technically, they announced, like, this guy who wrote a self-published a novel. A local horror host were the actual guests they still had. But, like, they had, like Christina V canceled. Like, all these people canceled. But they
kind of cosplay guests, from what I understand.
They had cosplay guests. Yeah, I didn't count them in the 17. Anyways, it was this huge, massive whatever, and it was lowly attended. But they announced back in May that they were holding a second one in September. September 24th, they held a second one less than a year later, and they did it in Petaluma instead of in Santa Rosa. They did it in Petaluma, California. So what I love is that I told Patrick Delahanty, the guy who runs AnimeCons.com, who happens to live in Petaluma, that I would pay him $20 if he went to the second Wine Country Comic Con. I told him that last spring, and he said, never, I won't do it, except then he did. So if you go to AnimeCons.tv, they have a video that they did. You have to go back a week or so. But he went and took footage to, like, the saddest convention you've ever seen. It's just, like, it's just empty. And, like, obviously, like, you know, there are lots of things I could say. Like, you know, early on in promotion for this event, they talked about having, like, free eye tests for kids and stuff like that, which doesn't appear to have happened at the event. So what's up with that, Uriel? Uriel Brenna. But anyways, some of the charity stuff is supposed to be happening with this event. I'm trying to figure out what happened. But mostly it looks like the only people who really came were the people who came for the Smash Brothers tournament, because there happens to be a nationally ranked Smash Brothers player local to Petaluma. And he just brought a bunch of friends because there was a cash prize for their Smash Brothers tournament.
Smash Brothers players get pretty intense.
Yes, they do.
That.
But, you know, they came pretty much just for that. But this was in many ways a spite con, because it was scheduled against the Santa Rosa Toy and Comic Con, which has been on the schedule for a really long time. And there's kind of a feud between Mike Holbrook, the organizer of Santa Rosa Toy and Comic Con, and Uriel Brenna, mostly because Mike was kind of appalled at all the stuff that Uriel was doing. And mm-hmm. Uriel was mad that Mike Holbrook has been posting about it nonstop.
Whoops.
Mike Holbrook is a little bit of can be a little harsh to talk to, but it doesn't change the fact that Uriel Brenna did some, what at least on the surface looks like, sketchy things. People have always asked me, is this a scam? And I've always said, well, they did the thing. They did the thing they said they were going to do eventually. So, you know, it's like
at least the thing happened.
Is it sketchy? Yes, but it's not but it's not technically a scam, because again, it happened. He just did weird creepy stuff while promoting it the first time around. So, you know, amazingly, they've announced a third one. They have announced a third one. And it is in December. I'm not even going to bother looking up the exact date. It's in December, and the address listed on the flyer is for a baseball card shop.
What? Okay.
Yeah, no. It's apparently they're going to try to hold a third convention in a baseball card shop. What? The card shop that it's in was one of the sponsors of the second event, and I'm just going, what?
Has jumped the shark.
That is, like, I don't even know what the point is. Like, you're not even, like, some people have accused him of trying to, like, obviously there has to be some sort of intention of trying to sabotage Santa Rosa Toy and Comic Con by scheduling on their weekend on purpose, because they right. originally tried to get into Santa Rosa Toy and Comic Con's venue, which is the county fairgrounds, which has multiple buildings in it, where reportedly, and this is the what I've been told, and I have not confirmed this, is that Uriel Brana tried to reserve another building in the same complex as Santa Rosa Toy and Comic Con, but Santa Rosa Toy and Comic Con's contract with the fairgrounds prevented it from happening. So, like, this is weird stuff. Like,
yeah, to say the least.
I don't know. It's I will say my advice to Mike Holbrook is, you don't even need to talk about this. Don't even, like, mudsling at Uriel. It's so not worth it for you, because every time you do, you just make Uriel look more legitimate, because you look like a spiteful competing convention promoter. Just let Uriel bury himself with how terrible these events are. Because seriously, go watch AnimeCons.tv's video on this. It's just amazing. Like, I can't
I
even...
I have no doubt.
Anyways, but we should talk about happier convention things.
Indeed. Just the weekend before this last one.
So in other words, the same weekend as Wild Wine Country Comic Con 2 was happening.
Mm-hmm. We were doing the first ever Nerd and Tie Expo up in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. The last nerd convention to be held at the Plaza Hotel and Suites before it is torn down. And, yep.
God, that's coming up at a, like, well, it's not gonna physically getting torn down to, like, December, but it's closing up pretty fast here.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
I'm very happy with, we're going to be pretty, biased about, our own event, but yeah, I'm happy with how people enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Because the people who were there had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I will say, like, everyone seemed to have a really good time. We went out to run our goal was to create a small convention run as professionally as a good large one. And that's what we did. Mm. We created what I consider to be, for the attendee experience, the perfect small convention. Now, were we perfect? No. Obviously, you know, we estimated a slightly higher turnout, and so we estimated a higher turnout, so we had our vendors and artists. The number we had was for a larger group. So I do feel a little bad for, I know some of the artists didn't, you know, like, I wish they could have made some more money. I'm not going to lie.
Uh-huh.
And so, but I think that was really, like, that is the only thing I really think that didn't go well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I would have loved more of that. But yeah, everyone who was there had a really good time. I think we offered some really interesting stuff. I actually can honestly say that I got to the only room I didn't really get to participate with attendees in. Like, I tried to actually participate with the attendees and see what they were up to. Only room I didn't do anything of that with was the board gaming room. But everywhere else. Yeah, tabletop room.
Yeah, and all reports
beyond that.
Yeah, our tabletop room was obviously sponsored by and run by Gnome Games, out of Green Bay and Appleton, and they did a phenomenal job. It's all reports.
Oh, yeah.
People in there had a good time.
When I swung by there, everyone was having fun. I just didn't get to do anything with the attendees there.
Who got to do anything? We were working.
This is true.
I finally got my voice back from the convention about 5 days ago.
Mm.
I was completely without voice for about a week.
My voice came back pretty fast, but meh.
But yeah, no, it's so I do want to say thank you to everybody who came out, everybody who, like, all of our guests, all of our vendors and artists. We really appreciate you guys, you know, coming out and having fun with us.
Holy cats, what a great guest lineup we had.
Oh my God. Like, yeah. No.
They were amazing. All of them were amazing.
Yeah, and so while we are still trying to figure out how we're going to do it again next year, because we are right now we are in process of trying to find a new venue for 2017. We are scouting locations. We're gonna just have to, honest to God, because the only other physical space in town that was equal to what we had at the Plaza is not available for any dates next year. We're gonna shrink the con. We're gonna go smaller physically, but we're gonna make sure it's just as fun for every attendee who comes in the door as it was this year. So we are going to do our best to stick in Eau Claire. That's kind of our
stick with that crowd, since we already established ourselves with the locals.
Yeah, because you know we went to the Plaza thinking we were gonna stay in Eau Claire long term, and so we're gonna make that happen, just not at the Plaza. And
indeed.
So it's I think
I'm very proud of our work there.
I'm very proud of what we did. Good.
It was one of the best convention staffs I've ever worked
with.
Oh
my God, I love our staff so much.
Everyone
did
a great job.
All of our staff. If you are listening and you worked for us the 2 weeks ago, oh my God, you are amazing people and we love you.
Yeah, not a single one of you let things slide or slacked off. You all kicked so much butt.
Yeah, I think the only problem with someone coming to, like, we had to at one point fill in for shifts because one of our the other Zach, we had two Zachs on staff, Zach Fisher, he had to go home sick at one point, so we did have to scramble to fill his hours. But besides
the only staff member who didn't really pull his weight was Germs, you kind of ruined stuff for us. Not really cool, Germs.
Again, I couldn't speak for like a week.
Germs.
Yeah, Zach got sick.
We would like you to not come back next year.
Other Zach got sick.
Everyone else did great, though.
Zach was fine. Other Zach got sick. It's very confusing. I will say that this was the first convention I have run. Like, I've been working conventions since the mid-90s. This is the first convention I have worked that I can remember where there were no emergencies.
That was nice.
Like I've never had, like, there was a mild panic on Friday that got resolved by just waiting. Because someone forgot to call ahead and make sure we knew that they were gonna be, but they were exactly where they were supposed to be on time in reality. Mm-hmm. So that was the worst of it. The worst of it is we started coming up with a contingency plan for a problem that never happened.
Yeah, I'm really proud of that weekend, and I really hope more of you come out to it next year, because we had a good time.
If
you weren't there, you missed out on it, but you don't have to next time.
That's right.
Just saying.
Unless, like, you're in, like, McMurdo Station in Antarctica. Then you can't come.
And you're out of luck.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, because it's entirely possible someone in Antarctica is listening to us right now going, I wish I could have gone to that, but I'm in Antarctica.
I wouldn't rule it out.
And I'm so tired, it's hard for me to say in Antarctica. I mean, honestly, just try to say in Antarctica.
In Antarctica. Yeah, is a little challenging. So,
speaking of challenging, I think it's time we move on to our mailbag.
Indeed.
Let's
see what we got in here.
I've got a
bag of mail.
Going to the mailbag. It doesn't have a jingle. All right. So the first thing in our mailbag is we got something here from Corfan. Subject: fan question for Fur. Fur is not here, although we do have Fur's answer. That I will read. Corfan asks, what's the record for consecutive episodes in which those two argue about Federation starships that are inferior to the Constitution class? Now, Fur answers 4, and my answer is 0, because all the ships we've been talking about are obviously superior to the Constitution class.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so one could argue that in firepower, the Miranda class is not as strong as the refitted Constitution class. because Kirk was able to defeat Khan. However, Khan held his own without really any starship experience.
Yeah, dude almost wrecked Kirk in his first starship battle, presumably ever.
Yeah. So actually, so, I have to, the Reliant, actually, if you reverse the ships of, like, Kirk in the Reliant and Khan in the Enterprise, I'm sure that movie would have been done in 15 minutes.
That it would be a very sad, it would be a way sadder funeral at the end, that's for sure.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that, like, obviously the Miranda class was better equipped for battle than the Enterprise, or else Khan wouldn't have had a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So I
also,
you know, so
it is a damn fine starship.
And I'm obviously a big fan of the Nebula class, and anything from the Next Generation era, with the exception of some of the old Excelsiors they still have sitting around, would wipe the floor with the Constitution class. Right? I mean,
I think you're selling the Excelsior a little short. I mean, come on.
Well, no, the Excelsior would defeat the Constitution class, but it would be more of a challenge because it's more akin to the similar technology.
That's true.
But what I'm saying, like, the Excelsior would win, obviously. But because the Excelsior is newer, better, faster, and obviously a refitted Excelsior from the period of Next Generation is going to have more powerful phaser banks and a better photon torpedo load. But, like, anything, like, the Nebula class is going to wipe the floor with the Constitution class in 2 seconds. Like, I mean, not even with a weapons pod loaded for the modular pod on top that can be outfitted with either a weapons pod, a sensor pod, or many other pieces of research equipment.
Put in short, we reject your premise, Core fan. We reject it.
No, we don't reject the premise. We just say zero. Because we've never argued about Federation starships that are inferior to the Constitution class.
Exactly.
So there. I would drop the mic, but it's in a swing arm stand and also expensive.
Yeah.
I have other mics I could drop, but they're way over there. On the other side of the room.
In the words of Greg Universe, what am I doing? These are expensive. Anyway. Oh my God.
You've got something there in the mailbag, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I've got one from our buddy, the Random Ramblings Man. And the subject is frozen French fries. Good evening, my fellow nerds. Hope you're all doing all right. As of this mailbag, it's raining like mad in Massachusetts, and let me say, it's been a long time coming, but I digress. Tonight I'm going to narrow my mailbag's focus on three TV shows that have either premiered or returned to television recently.
I would be terrified, I just want to say, with the length of this email, I'd be terrified of what the unfocused version would look like.
As Mickey Rourke said in the first Expendables, two are a walk in the park and one's to hell and back. First up, the third season of Star Wars Rebels, currently 3 episodes in. Putting aside my prevailing skepticism about the quality of this post-acquisition EU, I've consistently enjoyed Rebels from day one. While it's too early to tell, I have a feeling the third season will be the best and most quality-consistent Rebels has yet had. If I had to pick a signature moment of Season 3, it'd be the moment Thrawn first steps into frame, as if he stepped right out of the novels he first appeared in.
I've never watched an episode of Rebels in my life. I have to admit it.
I liked what I saw of Season 1. And for what it's worth, Timothy Zahn was freaking out on Twitter because he was having trouble coping with one of his characters becoming a TV character.
The
week before it happened.
I've only seen Timothy Zahn freak out in person.
Yeah.
At me.
That's way
better.
Oh,
the 90s.
Indeed.
Timothy Zahn doesn't remember meeting me, but I remember him yelling at me.
Next, there's Netflix's latest addition to the MCU, Luke Cage. What else can I say about this show other than it's amazing? Well, the cast is on point with some great performances. Harlem makes for a great setting for the show. The music is simply magical, and much like Jessica Jones before it, This show isn't afraid of tackling real-world issues that affect a lot of people right now through the medium of superhero fiction. I can't recommend Luke Cage enough. Here's hoping Iron Fist and Defenders prove just as good as their predecessors. And at last, the one show I really shouldn't have watched, Gotham. Well, we could have told you that.
Yeah, I was going to say, we had someone, Arkhamize quit writing for the site because he couldn't bring himself to write any more Gotham recaps for us.
Yeah, that show kills people.
That show broke Arkhamize.
That show broke Arkhamize, which, let me tell you, that dude sat through the Haruhi Suzumiya Endless 8 twice. Yeah, I didn't think it was possible to break Arkhamize. Anyway, and yet for some reason, cursed curiosity compelled me to lay eyes on this mediocre train wreck. I managed to slog through the first season, but failed to complete the second. I think the moment I gave up was the end of the second episode of Wrath of the Villains, when it really sunk in that Mr. Freeze's last name is pronounced on Gotham as if they are talking about French fries. That is kind of weird. I don't like that.
Yeah. Freeze.
Still, season 3 is proving less mediocre than what I've come to expect, but it still has oodles of problems. I'll keep tabs on Gotham for the time being.
Why?
Anyway, that's
I love
all
that
I've
was spontaneous.
That was amazing. Holy crap. Till next time, my excellent friend. Stay random. P.S. Hi, Arkhamize and Langland. Are you sure? Oh.
Did you start reading the CAPTCHA?
I almost read the CAPTCHA. Damn it.
CAPTCHA.
Damn it! Anyway, I almost read it. Damn it.
Yeah, it's okay. Langland, we are not reading your letter, but we'll tell you why later if you want to know.
Uh-huh.
You know. But we still love you, Langland, so keep writing.
Indeed.
All right, so that moves us on to the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge, for those of you who don't know, is the part of the show where I read a section from a random book, and we challenge you, the listeners, to guess what novel I am reading from. Why is it called the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge? Because there's a guy named Vomit Hat Steve. That is the answer. Now, if you guess right, you get included on the Hall of Awesome. What are the benefits of the Hall of Awesome? First, you get listed on a webpage. A webpage that, in fact, has a photo of Vomit Hat Steve on it. You also get your name read aloud every episode of the podcast. That is it, though. That's the whole benefit.
That's pretty good, though.
This is a fun little game that we play. Now, the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkhamize, Zero, Reina Innocenti, Krishizi McDamu, Krista, Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lilysaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsey, Minnesota Librarians, and Sean Orange. If I mispronounce any names in there, I'm sorry. It's because I was speaking very quickly. And now for the book that we are, in fact, going through. As it is a new book, because Sean guessed the old one, and because we did a live episode, I couldn't bring out a book. The new book that we will now start reading lines from. Here is your line. There was a moment's silence. If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com/contact. Click on the tell us what you think the book was. Or go there and write other stuff. Tell us your dreams, your hopes, your sleepy nightmares about Steve Buscemi crawling out from underneath your bed. All of that we want to know.
I don't know if I want to know. Oh.
Right.
Maybe I do. I'll put up with it.
All right. So with that, we should probably begin to close out the show.
Indeed.
So.
Go ahead.
So as always, I am in fact Trey Dorn.
I am in fiction Nick Izumi.
And, this has been Nerd and Tie. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or the Google Play Store. Rate and review us in those places if you feel like it. And in the magical land of Nod, you're never without shoes, unless you're barefoot on purpose. And then really, when you break it down, that's your own fault.
I have no idea what that means, but keep on Spockin' in the free world.
And dance party. You know, Fur claims that, you know, we slow it down, but we did better without him this time.
Yeah, we stayed on track.
We'll have him back next episode, though, people, we swear. Unless, like, he gets elected, like, governor of Minnesota or something. Then he can't come back ever. It's a rule. If you're governor of Minnesota, you can't be on Nerd and Tie.
Sorry, governor of Minnesota.
Yeah.
Kind of like the governor.
I didn't say there's anything wrong with the governor of Minnesota, or the current one.
He
can't be on the show. Yeah. I'm not from Minnesota. I don't know anything about the governor of Minnesota. I live in Indiana. I got my own problems. Never have the words "sound the alarm" been more appropriate. Oh God, we got political at the end. I need to hit stop. Where's the stop button?